When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host. I was coming out of the gate a little too hot there, Geekscapists. Started tripping on my own words. What I wanted to say is, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. If this is your first Geekscape, strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk, movies, video games, comic books, TV, all that pop culture goodness that'll fit under the hood of your little noggin there. We had a lot going on the past couple of days. We got a brand new Godzilla Kong movie. We had WonderCon here in Southern California. Didn't think I was going to go. Went, as you guys know. If you guys subscribe to the audio feed, you'll see that there is an audio episode that I recorded down in WonderCon with some amazing creators down there, all sorts of Geekscape friends. Some people maybe you've heard on this podcast, some new ones. Brian Bucciolato is on there, and who else? We got Zach Kaplan. Haven't heard from him in a few years here on the podcast. Dennis Culver, who you first heard in LA Comic Con, part of our comics creation panel. He was there. Casper Van Dien and a few others, including several Geekscape podcasters, all joined me to do like a nice grab bag of mini interviews, and it's all spliced together in there for you in the audio feed. So if you're watching this on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitch, you should go to like Spotify or Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the podcast, because there is audio content that I'm putting out on there that we never recorded video for, so it didn't end up on any of those video outlets. And so, yes, I love that you're watching this live. Love that you're watching the video, but also subscribe to the audio, because you're getting a little bit of extra podcast every couple weeks. Okay, this episode is no different. It's gonna be extra awesome. I've got two amazing creators, Tony Fleece, Tony Rodriguez. They're no strangers to Geekscape, and they're back with an awesome show. I'm not in the zone right now. They're back with a brand new awesome comic called Feral. If you enjoyed Stray Dogs, when a few years ago I said, hey, you should be reading Stray Dogs, and I know a few of you who went out and checked out Stray Dogs and came back and said, Stray Dogs is awesome. Really cool. Silence of the Lambs with like Homeward Bound. Really cool. I'll have them explain it. But y'all came back. Y'all enjoyed Stray Dogs. Well, that team is back. All right. Including Trish Forster. They're back with this brand new book. Feral. Feral is same kind of thing. Like they look like Don Bluth animation, Disney animation pets. In this case, it's cats, and they're out in the wild when a viral outbreak hits. So a little bit of George Romero, a little bit of Walking Dead, but you know, you're seeing it through the POV of these cute kitties and stuff, and now they're out in the wild while things are starting to hit the fan. Those creators are here on the show, and so I say, let's get this thing going. Okay, thank you. I'll try and figure out the English language in the meantime. Let's Geekscape it up. All right, Geekscapists, it is time to start the show. We have amazing creators, Tony Rodriguez and Tony Fleece, on. They have this brand new book called Feral. It is in comic shops. It came out last week. And Heidi said, who's on Geekscape this week? And I said, remember, we met them at the comic shop last week, and they signed my copy of Feral, Tony Rodriguez and Tony Fleece. And she said, oh, they are so sweet. But you don't have to take my wife's word for it. They got Tony and Tone right here on the show. Hey guys, how are you?
Just a couple of sweet boys.
Sweet boys. Guys, big week. I mean, I came out of the gate so excited to talk to you guys that I tripped all over my words there in that intro. But we just came back from WonderCon. I wasn't expecting to go, but I went down there. I saw Tony, didn't see Tone. And WonderCon was awesome. I hadn't been in a few years, and it kind of convinced me to go every year now. Like, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice having it nearby, having a big show like that. What day did you come down? I can't remember.
Saturday. Sunday? On Saturday. It was Saturday, yeah.
Tone should have been there. He was there all day.
Tone,
where were you going?
Yeah, where were you?
I'm right across from Tony.
But you would get up. So a lot of times you would be off somewhere. What were you looking for? Were you shopping?
No, I probably went to the restroom. I only left my table once for an extended period. I was dealing with somebody, and
I remember.
Yes. Do you have stalkers? Is that what's going on? You have stalkers?
Tone had a customer come up that was Tone. Usually very patient, but something struck him wrong, and he had to shut it down. He couldn't do it any longer. So then I got the guy.
Yeah.
I took it all, all the way to glory.
Yes, that happens though, and I think that happens. I mean, you came and visited us at the Geekscape booth, Tony, this summer, and every now and then I have to like kind of cut somebody off and be like, all right, pal, you don't make a very good window here for the product.
Yeah.
And move people along. I mean,
very rarely.
I mean, you have to be nice. Like, we are definitely in an industry where you want to be nice to everybody, but you're also like moving product. And are there stalkers? Do you guys get stalkers? We dealt with a stalker with the girls, Tessa Markle, who does Ephemera Guard for the Geekscape Network. She was walking around as Jean Grey, and there were lingerers that I had to be like, hey, pal, how are you doing? Maybe put some distance between you and the girls dressed like X-Men.
We don't have the X-Men girls type of level of stalkers. We just have more fans that are always around.
Yeah,
that's nice. Don't get me wrong. It's just
don't get it twisted.
For every so often, you'll just get somebody who they'll ask questions, and then as I'm trying to answer the question they give me, they'll hit me with two more questions, and then I realize they're not listening to me. So I just want to cut things off as quickly as I can. It's like, okay, look, I'm not getting anything out of this. You're not getting anything out of this. But generally, everyone's awesome. I mean, again, it's like the people that come up to the shows, they want to be there. They pay to get there. They seek us out. So generally, you know, they want to talk to you. And most of the time, they're great. So, you know, bonus.
I heard Super Action Man wanted to come back and visit you, Tone. Is that something you'd be receptive to, is having, the Star Spangled Speedo come and visit you?
We at Tone Rodriguez Art have contemplated getting the lawyers involved to make sure.
That's your stalker.
Stalker.
You know what? When you're dealing with somebody who's just his, and you look him up in the dictionary, and definition is wild man. You know, you got to kind of like, but he delightful, a delightful gentleman. One of the sweetest guys I know, but wow. Some of the stuff, some of his antics.
We'll send Tony some of those videos, catch him up on the history here at Geekscape. guys, I mean, talking about that, have y'all seen that the popularity of yourselves as creators have gone up since Stray Dogs? Because I meant what I said in the intro, that Stray Dogs was something that really, I mean, my relationship with Tony, with Tone goes back years, like 15 years at least. And I used to go visit him here in North Hollywood at the Creator House with Chris and everybody over there. And this Stray Dogs stuff, you know, you keep up with the career. And then when Stray Dogs came out, that was my introduction to Tony. And it was such a sharp idea. And I hope I described it right in the word salad of an intro, but having like the Don Bluth cute animal kind of animation characters against a backdrop of a darker world, right? Like, they're all in a house that they don't know how they got there, but maybe the person who owns it's a little too Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. And they start to put it together. That, from the solicitation, was a home run idea. How did it do for you guys in the miniseries and the follow-ups? How did that do for you guys?
Well, great, Jonathan. Thank you for asking. It did incredibly for us. It's we sold over 1 million of those things, you know, like that's no small potatoes in comics nowadays to try and to sell numbers like that, especially for a book about cute animals, especially for a book from, you know, me and Trish had only done My Little Pony comics, you know, for as far as everyone else knew. And Tone, you know, he'd been doing Simpsons for years, but, you know, he was even chilling then, you know, leading up to that, too. Like, none of us were, you know, coming off of like X-Men or something where this would be like the next popular book that we were on. So, yeah, it definitely changed things. I had been working on My Little Pony for about 10 years before that. So it's not like I was going to conventions and being and not doing well. Like, there was always people there, but it's a totally different crowd, you know, like it's you're selling to either bronies or kids. And to now you're selling to, you know, most of the people that are there for Comic-Con have at least heard of Stray Dogs or into Stray Dogs, you know, so that's cool.
I mean, it's really amazing. Tone, what was your, like, how'd your trajectory change or not with Stray Dogs?
Well, I mean, the thing with Stray Dogs, it's kind of like, if you look at like the music industry, when you think of somebody like, who, you know, starts off in country music and then all of a sudden they're doing pop music and vice versa. It's like the books don't just need to be appreciated by one single audience. The books are so big. It's like, and I've always told people, it's like, man, it's like, I don't want to find my little slice of the pie and go, these are my people. I'd love books that everybody wants to see. So when Tony first approached me on this and said what it was, I was like, oh, okay, sure. And then seeing it blow up the way it was, I mean, I don't think there were a whole lot of people who were like sitting there going like, oh, this is going to be the most amazing thing ever. And it became that. Tony does really good work. He comes up with some really amazing stuff. And that's the thing. The man works 100 different things at one time. It's like, this guy has so many wonderful ideas. And I'm always amazed at the next one because he's working on Uncanny Valley right now. That thing's amazing. I could go on for hours talking about how awesome I think Tony is and his writing and the stuff he does. But
go on, don't stop.
Hey, man, we're here.
I'm just saying, it's like, he's amazing. And like I said, it's great, you know. And why can't you like, you know, horror and cutie cartoony stuff, you know, once upon a time, you know, everybody had to draw the Marvel way and whatnot, and that's what people liked. It's like, okay, well, now you can like Marvel stuff and hot stuff, you know?
Yeah. What did you learn, Tone, as you're coming up as an illustrator? And a question for you too, Tony. I know that you were in the mines there at IDW on the, you know, you guys were on the Simpsons books and also on the My Little Pony books. And I'm sure you learn a lot from doing that. But like, what got you into illustrating the two of you, and how long did that design hold that style hold as you were developing as an artist?
What got me into, I mean, the same thing as everyone, you know, it's the comics that you read when you're 12, 13, 14 years old that really sort of like get their claws into you. So for me, that was early Image comics. It was like Youngblood and Wildcats and Gen 13 and stuff like that. X-Men. Just the, you know, the same answer you'll get from anybody my age, right? The same four or five guys. But then what happened, what sort of made, I think, my generation a little bit different is that our superhero artists formed Image comics. Like, they struck out and made their own stuff, and it sort of gave a whole generation of kids coming up this example of, oh, you don't have to just work for somebody your whole life. You know, it's sort of like these guys had reached the heights, like the highest heights you could reach at that job, and there was no place else to go besides, you know, switching companies back and forth for the rest of their careers until they peter out. And they were like, oh, well, we could just, you know, go make our own stuff and actually own it and control it. And that really had an effect on me, even though at the time I was just a kid seeing it. But I realize now, like, looking back on it, I never it was never as exciting to me, the idea of working for somebody else, as it was to just make my own stuff. So, and so I spent all those years. Can you hear my dog just drinking the shit out of this water?
I thought that was your dog drinking water, and I was like, what is more thematically appropriate? Well, you know what I mean? Like,
I like to get a cat licking their own paws. That would be better for Feral. But
so, well, sometimes Geekscapists who've been along with us for a long time, they remember my dogs oftentimes being on the show. Just I would be like, you know, what's the rule in film that if you can, like in documentary at least, if something wild happens while documenting something, point a camera at it so you can at least cut to it and address that that is what you are hearing, right? Like if traffic or something passing through frame. And that's kind of what I would do, is I'd pick on my dog and be like, hey, here you go. So now you can move the camera. And Geekscapists, we're watching this live. There is Tony's dog in the other room drinking, and you now know. So.
You see the tile floor. It's very echoey, and he's just drinking. He's maybe the thirstiest dog ever. Full bowl if you let him.
It will, and he has a tiny little bowl, too. That's the thing. Yeah. So it's constantly filled.
And so, and Tony, you kind of followed that path in Geekscape. So I know we're talking about Feral, we're talking about stray dogs, but if you're not reading Local Man is awesome. I love that book. Thank you. And I I'm being sincere. And I had to tell Brian Buccellato, because I do like Midlife as well. And if you Geekscapists who are listening on audio, go back and or just go in the feed and find the WinterCon episode. And I'll tell Brian himself. I said, hey, Brian, I love Midlife. It's, you know, one of my favorite books. But Tony's like one aisle over, and he's got the other like books that I love right over there. And I think Brian was okay sharing that ranking with you. But I think both those books are the ones that I look forward to, because they just echo that. I don't know. They echo something, but
they're specifically made for, like, you know, guys, you know, middle-aged guys who grew up loving superheroes and stuff, you know? So yeah, that you're the target audience for that one. Whereas like a Feral or a Stray Dogs is for everyone. Local Man, we found, is for guys like us. Nope.
Go for it. Sorry.
I'm never surprised by the people that come up and they're like, Local Man, I love it. You know, like, dude, I can see them coming. I know which ones they are.
It's got the right kind of like, oh my God, the malaise that your guys reflect in those characters, where, you know, life does not put you where you want it to be. It puts you where you're supposed to be, I think is almost the tagline for those two books, Midlife and Local Man. And I love your writing, guys. Like, I love the writing. I do. And you and Tim and Brian on his book, you know, you guys just really inspire me to keep writing, because the way that things fall into place, and on Local Man, you have this ability to introduce so many narratives going at the same time, and they're there from issue one. And whether it's a relationship with parents, whether it's somebody in town, an ex, this and that, ex teammates, the way you must be outlining, the way that you must be plotting these books out for the long game is just really great. And so Geekscapists with Stray Dogs, you have a mini series, and I how could you have anticipated that would be like a four quadrant book and so popular? Because it seems aimed at a horror crowd. It seems aimed at somebody who wants to see something a little darker in tone. Pun with your art, one of your artists. But with Feral, I was surprised when I got to the end of the issue. I thought it was a mini series as well, collection of mini series. Mm-hmm. I did not know that you guys were taking on an ongoing. What educated that decision, and how do you prepare that? Because again, I'm gonna talk about how great your pacing is and your outlines are, and you're doing now three books, I believe, if you're going to add Uncanny Valley.
Yeah, I'm doing five books.
Oh, what? But, Jesus Christ. Oh my God.
They're all different. They're all staggered, and some of them will wrap up and some of them will keep going, but right now it's five. That's why, as you can see, I look the oldest out of all of us right now. I'm really aging at some sort of warp speed. But yeah, the decision to have Feral be ongoing was just sort of grew out of how much we loved making Stray Dogs, and how much that, like, we loved working together, and then we loved the product that we ended up with. And so we wanted to do more, and we wanted to do more in a more substantial, ongoing type way. So it was about after, you know, after Stray Dogs and Dog Days wrapped up, we sort of sat and figured for a while, or I guess it was me mostly, what the next thing would be. And then I would start like sort of like shooting messages to Trish and to Tone, maybe draw something that looks like this, or draw, you know, like Tone, draw a background that looks like this. And we're sort of going back and forth and trying to figure out like how to do something that's very different, but that could be ongoing, but that also still felt like it belonged in the same, you know, on the same shelf as Stray Dogs. So yeah, it took some figuring, but it was mainly just, we made it so that we could keep working together and keep making the, you know, because I feel like we sort of like discovered a lane, you know, like there was, mm-hmm. there was not books like this, and now we make books like this, you know, and there are a couple, there's, you know, there was always Beast of Burden before this, and there was
Love Beast of Burden,
but those are slightly different. And I feel like we sort of zeroed in on the exact perfect way to do this type of story, at least for the stories that I want to tell.
The Evan Dorkin Beast of Burden, which I've promoted over the years on the show, and I love that one so much and has some wonderful artwork, really is very Buffy the Vampire Slayer, like with animals. Like, it's a group of people dealing with the occult and supernatural. And at least Stray Dogs very much isn't. I got to tell you, though, Tony, and I told you this, I think, at the table over the weekend, is in one of the narratives that you're introducing, and maybe this was educated by some of the extraordinary stuff that's going on in Local Man, and tell me if you're bringing this into the fold as a writer here with Farrell. But as I'm reading about it, I'm like, okay, cool. It's a Romero kind of setup, Geekscapist, with you know some radio broadcasts or people communicating over a viral outbreak. You don't know you still don't know after you finish the issue what the nature of the viral outbreak is, but you're focused on these cats being transported in the back of a vehicle. And you know from watching those Romero video movies that like that vehicle ain't gonna stay on the road, and things are gonna hit the fan. So I was like reading along, and I'm like, okay, this is all hitting those beats. This is all good. Tony knows them very well. There's a bit of flashback to prior lives in window seats with the cats that is romanticizing the life that isn't about to be interrupted by a scary viral outbreak. And then you hit a place in the book that has like a spirituality element in a kind of an otherworldly element to it. And you're going to get mad. Don't get mad. I call it the Wakanda sequence. Because it's all, you know what I'm saying? Because it's like when the Black Panther sees his dad and his dad's gone. I was like, what is this Wakanda sequence in this book? But it almost felt like the book needs it to separate it from Stray Dogs, if you understand that.
Yeah. It's 100% what it is. It's one of the ways that I thought about doing something different from Dogs, doing like not just taking the idea of doing a horror story with dogs and then just make it cats and not do anything different. Like, we thought about like, all right, well, what makes cats different than dogs, you know? And so there's all kinds of different things. Like, they are, you know, like they have a purpose. They're hunters, you know. Dogs they're just chilling. Like, they don't really have a purpose like that. And cats sort of have like this sort of like ethereal spirituality to them too. And that sort of comes up in that scene. Like, they would have some sort of, this cat Elsie has a calm about her, but it seemed like there would probably be some representation of like what she does when she cracks, or when she sort of like when she needs to get calm again, she sort of has this. She sort of starts to meditate and sees these visions, or like a spirit, called the spirit cougar. And even we went so far as Trish and I had worked on My Little Ponies, and I had worked a lot with Sarah Richard, who is another My Little Pony artist. So she does this like very beautiful watercolor work. And so we just hired her to do the cougar spirit magic. And so she, like, you know, like, the artists on the book are me and Tone and Trish, but then also every once in a while we have Sarah come in and just sprinkle, you know, this watercolor magic on the pages too.
One of the things I'm in awe of, and this is just me fawning over you guys for an hour, okay? So chill.
Love it.
One of the things that has me in awe is that plate spinning of the artists and how you guys discovered it. And I think you told that story on the last appearance where, you know, who's handling the backgrounds and who's handling characters and really finding like that sweet spot where you guys could really, really get this thing to click and work on a schedule. Tone, how receptive is Tony to maybe letting you run a little bit here and there, or say, are you coming in with ideas and saying, hey, what if I jam something a little different? Because it's tough to do when you're not the only artist on the book.
No, well, first and foremost, Tony does the layouts for the book. Like he has, especially on the first issues, like again, we're already on issue 7. That's how far ahead we are right now. And, you know, God willing, we're going to stay that far ahead to make sure that
it's Cougar God willing. Cougar God willing.
Yeah. Cool. Well, there you go. but the one thing is I try to make sure everybody knows Tony, especially in the early issues, gives me these really rough layouts. And some of them are tighter than others, especially when he has an idea and he knows what he wants to see. And so, you know, my job is to basically interpret them, make sure that I'm doing everything that he wants to see there. And, you know, if he doesn't see it, he doesn't really let me know. It's like, oh, this angle's a little wrong. We got to play with this. But, you know, I'm working off of, you know, his story. I'm working off of his layouts, and then I'm doing what I do. And then of course, when Trish comes in there and she does what she does, it's like, it's funny because we talked before we went on live and we were talking about working in the bubble. When I'm used to working in the bubble when I'm working on my own things, but when I work on things with other people, their input is, you know, crucial. And so what was happening is I was just doing these backgrounds, and even though I had the layouts, I knew where the animals were going to go. It was key to make sure that I was giving him everything. So like when you see the backgrounds, almost everything's there. Even if Trish draws a big giant head there, a lot of times there's something back there and you'll never see it. But the one time I cheap out and don't draw the whole background is the time she's going to draw a head a slightly smaller. And it's like, whoa, what happened in the background? So when I started, I was overworking it. I was, because I wanted to make sure Tony got everything he wanted, and I was doing it. And so as we went along and as busy as Tony got, the layouts would get a little looser. I would then go see Tony and work with him in LA for a couple weeks at a time. And then he wouldn't have to work as tightly because he could just give me some ideas and then go. And then issue 5, Tony kind of came up. Tony and Dennis Culver. I can't believe I said Greenwood.
Dennis Culver from this past weekend. Dennis Culver.
They came up with a mid-story break, and we totally did that layout, story, backgrounds, and everything totally different than anything we had done up until that point. So even though we've kind of gotten in our groove of how we were doing this, Tony and Dennis included came up with ways of kind of getting that excitement back in there. Because, you know, sometimes when you're working, it's like you're just moving from day to day, getting the things done, and you're getting things done and everything's great, but you kind of end up in the doldrums. When we hit issue 5, I think it was issue 5, it was just 6. Super exciting, fun to do it. No, it was 6, right?
Yeah. On Feral or on Street?
Yeah,
Guys?
On Feral.
Feral, yeah. I'm talking. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just turned into a lot more fun. Like, we, again, when you get, I hate to say bored, you know, because when you're just doing certain things, you get too comfortable. And then, like I said, they mixed it up and it made it a lot more enjoyable. Like, again, that one issue came together really fast and it looks really good. And the one thing I got to say about the work that we're doing with Trish is this is the first time I've ever got to work on a book where when it was finally done and finished, I mean, I was finished, you know, a while back. And then Tony finally gives me a hard copy of the book that I haven't really seen yet. I've seen pages here and there, but I haven't seen the book. I literally get to read this book almost like a fan, like, because I haven't seen a lot of the drawings. I haven't seen a lot of the finished stuff. And it's like, it's crazy. I worked on this book and I'm a freaking huge fan of this book because I got to read it like everyone else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I'll read a book that I worked on. I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever. And you put it off to the side. I already know what it is. I've already seen it. I did it. This book is so exciting. I was so pleased. I mean, Tony will tell you, as soon as I was done reading it, I told him, I said, man, that's a good book. I need to read issue 2 and 3. And he's like, there you go. It's right there.
So, it is cool that you get to be surprised by the character block in the characterization and get to see, you know, the facial expression, everything that is going into the characters. Because who handles the shadows? Does Trish, you handle Trish has the shadows as she has the characters, correct?
What do you mean, the colors?
No, if a character is, like in Stray Dogs, for example, if a character is standing in a doorway, doorways are the purview of Tone, but yeah. As she adds the character, she should add the shadow, correct?
There's really no shadows like that. The colorist will put in shadows sometimes, but the way we color, the characters are all flat. And so they have no highlights, no shadows on the characters.
On the backgrounds,
Yeah, but that's we do it in an open line style, so that's all Brad. That's all the colorist.
Yeah, that's cool. We're learning something.
I mean, when I draw the ground around the animals, I might imply like a shadow area, but like I said, it's when it gets finished. I mean, I don't know if how much of that actually stays in there, but like I said, my job is to make sure they have everything, and if Tony decides he needs to take something out, then I'm totally cool with it. I just want to make him happy.
This weekend was your first time facing the fans. I know you guys hit a couple of comic shops in LA this past week because I was at one of them. But what was the talk? What was the reaction? What issues did you see coming to your booth at WonderCon? How are people's response to that first week with Farrell?
A lot of them, we've been working on it for so long. It's surprising to me how attached they seemed right away. I think they're eager to, like, they love Stray Dogs. They're coming back to this. And so, like, they're ready to be into it. But I was surprised how attached some of them were to these characters. You know, they had all the regular responses where they're like, nothing better happened to Lord, you know, or you know, like, I was so scared for Patch, or, you know. So, like, I wasn't quite expecting that type of reaction that quickly because we sort of only just met these cats in this first issue. So that was nice. That was a nice surprise. But I have to think that a lot of that is part of the excitement that they're bringing with them to the book.
Is it because this is true for my experience? A part of me just inherited the love I had for Stray Dogs and carried it into Farrell. You know, which is a big responsibility for you guys, you know, I understand that's how you added dynamic things to it, right? Like, that's why you added a spirituality element, which would have been maybe risky in the other book, but you added it here. It's like, if you're a band, you didn't make even though it looks like the same album, you didn't make the same album twice. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. But that's why we tried to make it as different. Because if we had made the same album twice, there's no way we could have made it as good as the first one, you know, because people would already know all the moves and know where we're going.
Yeah, I mean, and not that Tony didn't like immediately wrap up, you know, Stray Dogs and go, all right, guys, we're going to do this. Like, again, he sat down and he, you know, worked with it for a while. And like he said, he'd pitch ideas back and forth and, you know, you're talking about like kind of being collaborative. It's like I'm not like an idea person when it comes to this. This is all Tony. But I remember sitting there one day and he kind of pitched something, like he was like just spitballing stuff. And I said something to him and he says, I like that. And he put it in the book. And I was like, well, it made me real happy. Like, you know, I actually said something that was a legitimate. I thought it was a good idea, but Tony took it. And he said, oh, that's a great idea. We love it. And it added a dynamic to the characters because, you know, they're cats, you know, they're able to, you know, protect themselves, but we came up with an element with one of them that, you know, he's special. He needs to be protected. And like I said, I just pitched one idea, and it was because the issue I pitched him, because I don't want to say anything, because I don't want people to not get it in the book. But one of our cats was like that, because we had cats, and Tony thought it was a great idea, and it's in the book, and it made me so happy. It's like, look, I contributed a little something, you know? So, yeah, it's cool. Tony's very open to that.
Do you miss the house in NoHo, in the back house of the studio? Because Tony's got a similar setup, and I imagine that's where you jam when you're in L.A. But, Tony, I just remember 10, 15 years ago, with, you know, hanging out at that house, and you know, some awesome creatives in there, and you have that kind of collaborative spitting back and forth and jamming on comics. Do you have a similar setup like that, or has that stuff kind of gone digital? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's totally kind of gone that way. The only time I actually have a situation where I can actually, you know, again, use the word spitball ideas, or kind of, you know, get people in my bubble. I want to do this. Hey, check this out. Look at what I'm doing. The only time I'm able to do that is when I'm, you know, around my other friends. It's not at the studio anymore. I mean, I have a, you know, a two-bedroom place that I'm at in Louisiana, and one of the rooms is the studio, and it really is just a catch-all for all my junk. You know, it's like, it's not like the garage. The garage was great because originally when you came in there for one of the first times, didn't we like move all the furniture around and stuff? And
we did a big panel. It's somewhere in the feed Geekscape. It's probably in like early year 2006 or seven, but it was like Kevin Rubio's in there and Chris Moreno. And we just, I don't even know what we were talking about, but I was like, this is such a cool community. But then meeting Dennis this past December, and knowing he came out of it, folks like maybe Chris Anderson came out of it later on, like knowing that LA and Tony was a part of that, and had, you know, it's like that stuff inspires me as someone on the outside of comic creation, flirting with the idea of comic creation for some of the ideas from film, or some of the ideas that just weren't ever going to be right for film, but should really be comics. It's like comics scared me, but I think that the community that you guys built, that you doing a cover for Sam and you being so welcoming, and then continuing to talk to Chris and continuing to talk to, and then talking to Dennis this past weekend, and just seeing the comics community, I was like, oh, this is the modern Marvel bullpen, without having editors yell at you. Like, this is why you got those awesome stories in the 60s, in the 70s. Yeah, they were born in places like this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the studio, we literally got to a point where, either Chris or Tony made a comment about like miking it up, like, oh, we should put mics in here so everyone can hear what we said or what we say. And then it wasn't long after we did that, we're like, oh, that sounds like a horrible idea. We should never do that. we finally got to the point where it was like, you could say anything you wanted in the studio. Like, you could say the most outlandish thing ever, but as long as you say it in the studio, it's like holy ground. It's like sacred, you know? And so it's one of those things that we still kind of like treat, like when I'm in Tony's studio, it's like we, you know, you say something, you look around, it's like, okay, that's right. We're in the studio. We're fine. We're safe. And oddly enough, some of it isn't so outlandish or crazy, but you know, if you said certain things in public, you know, in polite company, maybe you'd get an eyebrow or something. So
it feels like it's a conversation. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Tony.
It's also a safe place to come up with ideas and to kick concepts around. And also, like, the great thing about the studio was having other artists around to watch how they would do things, or they could walk around while you're working on something and point out, like, oh, this elbow's wrong, or what, you know, like, just, it was just a very helpful collaborative environment to be in. Even from just, like, seeing, I showed up and I saw Tone and Chris Moreno working a ton, and seeing them have no, you know, at the time had no issues with bills or anything. And I was struggling, and I was like, oh, they just always seem to be working. So maybe that's the trick, you know? And then that, you know, that sort of led me into always working. And that's worked out pretty good, but it's just sort of like you pick up on the way other artists do things just by being around them and working. And it's sort of, there's not competition, but it is sort of like nobody wants to be the first one to go to sleep. Nobody wants to be the first one to knock off and stop working. And so there's
everybody agreed. Gone. Yeah, I mean, we would do that thing where it's like, you know, oh, look who showed up first today. Yeah, it would just be like that.
Oh, buddy, you must be so sleepy. I guess you gotta go get some rest. That's fine.
Yeah. You don't want to fall asleep with all those markers laying around. I mean, you just end up with you'll end up with a bunch of stuff painted on your face.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a conversation I had a few weeks ago on this podcast with Chris Black. He sure runs Monarch on Godzilla. He did the Kirkman show Outcast on, it was I think on Cinemax or something. He sure ran that one, which is how we met him. But he talks about the writer's room in the same way. He says, hey, it's a safe space and you have to be free not to say the most un-PC stuff, which maybe under a corporate mandated like a writer's room maybe isn't, but the stupidest ideas. He's like, the stupidest ideas should be able to live there. The wildest, like, freeing ideas. And then, you know, you throw the football as far as you can, and then you throw it the rope as far as you can, and then you slowly work it back and see what you reeled in. So you see at what point that idea clicks, you know. But if you're too afraid to throw it as far as you can and then bring it back and see where it clicks in place, then your story is only gonna grow and be built in these increments that maybe won't reach an audience. I mean, the idea of taking what looked like cute animated characters and putting them in a dark background, compliments of the Violent Messiah's creator and this and that, like, what was that first thought, Tony?
Well, the first, like, I had the idea of a killer that kidnapped people's dogs and take them as trophies. That was sort of the spark for the whole thing. And then very quickly after that, I sort of went through in my head, like, the angles you could tell that story from. So I thought about, you tell it from the perspective of the victims, you know, or do you tell it from the perspective of the killer or the cops? And then just from having worked in My Little Pony for so long and sort of like having my head in this like cute animal place, there was also this open door for like, oh, you could tell it from the perspective of the dogs. And when I thought about that, I thought about Oliver and Company, and I thought about All Dogs Go to Heaven, and I just thought, like, that's cool if that looks like that. It's just sort of like I had an instinct that that would be cool. And part of that was, again, coming from doing My Little Pony comics and doing cartoon comics and having a bit of a chip on my shoulder about people saying whether or not I could do certain kind of stories, you know, like... the reason I drew My Little Pony comics is because they told me at IDW that I was too cartoony to draw Ninja Turtle comics.
Whoa.
And I was just like, yeah, well, I mean.
That's really rude.
Well, no, that's just what Nickelodeon said when I sent my samples in. That's just part of the, you know, part of the, like, applying to work someplace type thing.
They're Ninja Turtles. They were literally a cartoon.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. Believe me,
now they have a title that is TMNT Adventures Saturday or whatever. Morning. That is a Saturday Morning Adventure. That is the cartoon version.
Well, that one I probably could have gotten a job on. But at the time, they were just doing realistic ones. And so, but it did give me this chip on my shoulder that I was just like, I'll show people that you can do, you know, different kind of stories with this kind of artwork.
I can see
like that,
why.
That was important to me. Also, I remember... when the whole time I worked on ponies, the awards at Comic Cons, like the Eisners or the Harveys, or like they had this rule where they wouldn't nominate licensed comics for awards. So like ponies could never be, or you know Ninja Turtles or but like we were always just like, but Spider-Man is also licensed, you know, like Superman's a licensed comic also, you know. So it just seemed like a real arbitrary line to draw. I was carrying that baggage and then having this idea, and it all sort of happened in a sort of way where I was like, all right, well, let's do it this way. And Tone and I had worked together in the studio for years, and we had worked closely together and he'd done layouts for a bunch of my projects. Where it would just be like, I need somebody to help me out on this pony project or on this other, you know, like I just need somebody to help me with these layouts. And he would jump in and I would, you know, pay him to do, you know, a couple of pages in an issue or, you know, a whole issue, or like he helped lay out pages for Jeff Steinberg, my only book, or Equestria Girls, like the My Little Pony thing where they turn into real girls. So we just worked like that, and we had hired Tone on to do layouts for Time Shopper, which is another creator-owned book that I did. And that had gone well. And then it was like, all right, well, let's just do this again, because I kept working with these. I had found Trish, who was like a perfect artist for drawing Don Bluth style animals and dogs and stuff. But she is also, she was green. She had never drawn sequential stuff. So I was like, well, we're going to need somebody to do the panel to panel stuff and help her along with that, because this is a complicated, like, adult story.
Sure.
So it's not the type of thing where you just want to have somebody on their first, you know, on their first comic book doing
it's horror.
All the things.
Pacing, yeah. Tone, framing, that stuff is crucial. It's math.
Yeah. So yeah, that's basically how it came together. That's how it ended up looking like that. I was like, well, let's make it look as much like animation as possible. And so let's make the backgrounds, you know, have a lot of detail, and let's make the cats, or in this case, the dogs, have not a lot of detail, but just a lot of character and a lot of sort of expression. Like animated style expression. Yeah.
Having just heard what you said about your earlier experiences, is Local Man a bit of like a, is it an FU in some places to people who doubted you? Does that make sense, Tony? Like, to people your whole life, there's a lot. I think I like you, Tony, because there's something punk rock about you that I like. and I know that I resonate, that Local Man resonates with me in the same way, in that the guy from the Image 90s Image team that gets kind of short shifted off the team, and there's this and that, and he comes back as a quote unquote failure to his hometown and saves it in a lot of ways, and continues to save it in a lot of ways, but still deals with misunderstanding. That doesn't come from that dealings with the industry at large or the world at large and saying like, hey, I can do this. Y'all have a stupid rule about licensed properties. Hey, I can prove myself. And now you have a character in Local Man that is misunderstood, seen sometimes as a reject, you know, and that he has to save. You know, does it make sense? I'm over psychoanalyzing you, brother.
What you're saying makes sense, but it's not necessarily that. I mean, there's a lot of darkness from my real life and from Seeley's real life that goes into that book, but it's not necessarily that part of it. Like, both of us have had a pretty decent ride in comics, you know, despite any sort of, you know, I mean, like, you know, Todd McFarlane got rejected, you know, 500 more times than I got rejected before he got, you know, his first job in the business.
He was
just part of, like, I heard he was walking around.
Yeah, he took a picture with my early with the Super Action Man artist, Ace Continuato. I saw it on the social media. I was like, oh my god, Todd's right there taking a photo with Ace. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I didn't have enough. Like, it's definitely not a comic about, you know, how comics did me wrong or anything like that. They definitely, I mean, as soon as I got My Little Pony, for real, my life got pretty great. You know, like, I was making a full living off of this book, and it's not like it paid that great. It was just really steady. And there was sort of like this bonus other income stream that came with it, of being able to do conventions and, you know, all this other stuff that you wouldn't expect.
But ultimately, you want to own it. Ultimately, you're in the game, and like you said earlier, I know you and I both listen to, you know, Rob's Revations with Rob Liefeld, sure. And he tub thumbs for that angle more than anybody I know. The IP, the ownership, and here y'all are with these books. Talk to me about Uncanny Valley, which is the new book coming out from Boom and Geekscape. If you're going to want to go into a comic book store this week or next week, when does it drop? It drops in the next week or two.
It comes out on the 10th.
On the 10th, you're going to want to go pick up this book, Uncanny Valley. It looks awesome. And just think about it as a pop culture Roger Rabbit on a comic book page. It is a celebration of all the stuff we love as pop culture enthusiasts, but it's a journey through it's a comic book. And I see that you've got shout outs to all sorts of different stuff without directly like lifting the licenses or anything, but you got jams on all sorts of things, from video games to comics to cartoons, and it looks like a romp.
It is. It is a rom. I mean, it's heartfelt, like all my stuff is. It's me and Dave Wachter at Boom Studios. Dave's doing Punisher right now at Marvel. He did Ninja Turtles. He did Planet of the Apes. He did Godzilla. He's done all kinds of stuff. But we've known each other for a long time, for as long as I've known Tone, probably. And he and I worked together a couple times through the years just on very small stuff that people wouldn't see. And then finally, you know, this is a story that I've had for like 10 years kicking around. And finally, Boom was after Stray Dog success, they were like, we'd like to do something with you. And I sort of showed them all my ideas and they were like, let's do this thing. And so then I was able to pay to have Dave draw it, which is sort of the what kept me from making that story for so long is that it's so complicated that you need somebody really good to do it. And usually somebody really good cannot just work for free for 6 months or whatever while you're putting it together. Like, I don't know. That's how we ended up like making this book at Boom with Dave. But the story of it is it's a coming of age story. It's about a boy that's about 12, 13 years old. And he has a single mom and she's a traveling nurse and they're always moving and he's always the new kid in class and he never feels like he fits in. He always feels like slightly out of place or like there's something wrong with them or something different. And he starts to manifest these sort of like weird things start happening to him. He has like what almost seem like cartoonish powers. And then in the first issue, we find out that's because he meets his grandfather who he's never met before. And he finds out that he's part cartoon. His grandfather's like a Yosemite Sam style rootin' tootin' cartoon cowboy. And he has to go on this adventure with his grandpa. He has to go on the run because they're being chased by this murder of killer crows. And they have to go on the run, and it ends up being like this big sort of like Percy Jackson chosen one type adventure story where this kid finds out that he has this important place in the middle of this big battle between the cartoon world and the real world. And so it's this big giant story, and we're just getting started on it. The first issue comes out on the 10th, and then Dave's finishing up the second issue right now, and we're working on the third issue, and it's just really beautiful. He is doing all the artwork, the colors, everything, sound effects, and he's coloring himself. So he gets to do the same tricks we're doing on Feral and on Stray Dogs, where the backgrounds are very rendered and the cartoon characters are very flat and cartoony. And it just looks very vibrant on the page. Like it just crackles.
Dude, the second that solicitation went out, I circled that one fast. I was like, this looks great. And regardless of your involvement, like Tony, I'm clearly a fan at this point and a supporter here, and Geekscape's a supporter. We've been supporters of Tone for years. We're still waiting for him to bring Tyrese on the show. I'm messing with you, Tone.
Mayhem.
I'm still waiting on my Mayhem too. You're still waiting on that Mayhem. I still got that Mayhem costume in storage that a Geekscape has bought me because we were joking about Mayhem so much. Not joking. I mean, to me, it is a modern opera.
Tony wouldn't let me throw it out. I had it in his storage and I was like, I'm going to throw this out. And he says, don't you dare.
Mm-hmm. Maybe next time, if Super Action Man doesn't come find you at the next convention, maybe Mayhem will come down. And check it out. Walk up and be like, "Yo, it's Mayhem time!" Wearing the costume that's not even in the comic book.
Yeah, absolutely.
It says Mayhem on the chest. You can't avoid who it is, and you know it looks like Hulk Hogan's yellow outfit, but like it's Mayhem. There's no confusion here. Yeah. We're big Mayhem fans here on Geekscape.
Yeah.
New Geekscapists who haven't been part of the long time Mayhem and Tone relationship here on Geekscape is like, what the hell are you talking about? We're not going to explain it to you, Geekscape, but you got to go back in the vault and find the Mayhem stuff. You got to find it. You got to. Oh, man. Geekscape can start voting now. It's insane. Guys, thanks for coming on the show. Geekscape, again, the book is called Feral. First issue's out. And then while you're in the comic book store, if you don't have a pull list, or if you have a pull list, Uncanny Valley is going to go on it, okay? And if you're not reading Local Man, then you're a new Geekscape listener, because if you've been listening to Geekscape, I've been yelling at you to listen to pull Local Man too, because my favorite book of 2023, and it's one of my favorite books of 2024, and only because y'all created your own competition for that title. Sorry.
Hell yeah.
You did it to yourself. love you guys. So glad I saw you guys last week and this weekend at WonderCon. Casey Abis, do you want more WonderCon content? Listen to the audio feed. I put a special WonderCon episode in there where I've spliced together interviews with a lot of the people I talked to on the floor, including Dennis Culver, who we just talked about, and who has a brand new book from DC, a new Doom Patrol book. And that's in comic book stores, I believe, this week. So
this week,
go check that one out. Dennis is a great dude, and I appreciate you, Tony, introducing me to him.
Yeah. Local Man Volume 2 in comic stores this week as well.
Woo!
You should get that. And then Unstoppable Doom Patrol in that order.
Yeah. Yeah. So buy the old trade, Local Man number one, and then get the new one, fresh, the second one. And then you'll be roughly caught up, and then pick up some single issues. You guys have your missions. Go out and do your missions, Geekscapists. Thanks for listening. You can find Tony and Tone at where on the socials?
I'm everywhere at Tony Fleece. You can go on TonyFleece.com. There's a mailing list on there. You can buy original art there. You can buy variant covers and all kinds of cool stuff. Art books. You can buy Time Shopper there. Tone.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm at all the places at Tone Rodriguez 2000. So easy to find.
If I want to get one of those mayhem costumes, Tone, do you sell those in your shop?
I have one, and I'm willing to sell it. I'm willing to give it away. But like I said, Tony said I couldn't throw it away, so I'll have to sell it.
You can give it to a fan for sure.
Okay.
We're currently converting Geekscapes. Remember when I did this episode, the show out of my office? We're converting that into the baby room, and I'm waiting for Heidi to pull the mayhem. I'm waiting for her to pull the mayhem costume out and be like, "What is this?" And then, and I'll be like, "That baby is the basis for an entire religion here at Geekscape Mayhem." Geekscapes, we'll catch you next week. There's a couple different people coming on the show, maybe not coming on the show, but there will be a show next week because I love talking to creators, and that is what we do. Movies, video games, comic books, TV, all that stuff. So if you enjoyed it, subscribe, share it with your friends, all that. If you hated it, email me, jonathan@geekscape.net. I'll take criticism. I'll take your notes. Go for it. Until then, don't hate create, and we'll catch you guys next time. Peace.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.